I recently saw that well-known luxury watch retailer has raised some outside funding. And I thought, why would luxury time in a tough economy be raising money? And who'd be giving money to a company that makes its money selling secondhand goods and selling secondhand goods into a market that surely itself is struggling? That was one question. The other, how do you make a living out of selling posh pre-owned watches? Our guest this evening on How I Make Money is Adrian Rutman, who's been doing this for 19 years and counting. What is your fascination, Adrian, with posh watches, expensive watches, luxury watches? What term do you prefer?
I'd call them luxury watches, Bruce. But I suppose you can call them luxury toys or, it's collectibles for some guys. What fascinated me about watches is I just started watches from a young age. I always remembered looking at my dad's watch. I think he had like a Seiko or some pretty low-end watch at that time that he was wearing admired.
We all had a Seiko at some, or a Seiko, because a Seiko is something completely different. At some point. I like my Seiko. I like some Seikos too, but that's a different story. Absolutely. So, but again, and Seikos were inexpensive, but yeah, there were some pretty attractive ones. And was that the beginning of the
situation? It's more about the look of the watch that fascinated me more than the brand. I didn't really know a lot about brands when I was still young, so it was purely the look of it. As I grew older, then I could appreciate the value in the watches, and then I started following the brands. And you know, some brands has investment quality, others is just purely outrageous watches that are just horological masterpieces that the watchmaker just took time to make and just for people to enjoy. That's not really assets or something that will appreciate in value, but just purely the beauty of the watches.
Yeah, absolutely. And what makes one watch more expensive than another? Because ultimately they have a function, and that function is to tell time. That function is to say it is now, and look at my phone, and I look at my computer, and my computer tells me it's 1943. My phone tells me it's 1943, which means 17 minutes before 8 o'clock and 17 minutes before the money show ends. Those clocks have served a purpose. This is not about the function of time telling, although the mechanisms that are created in some of these things are amongst some of the most precise instruments on earth.
Yeah, believe it or not, an automatic watch is actually not as precise as a quartz watch would be. So,
really?
It is definitely not 100% accurate time, but it's not about, as you just mentioned, it's not about the, it's not about telling the time. A watch is to tell the time, but really these kind of watches that people are moving to, the investment kind of watches, the very high end luxury watches, it's more of status symbols, I'd say. People, if you walk into a boardroom and you have a nice watch on, people around you, they do take you a little bit seriously, or I don't know, it's something to express yourself, but not in a loud way. You obviously get the blingy watches with diamonds and golds, and if you walk into a room, everyone's going to notice it. But it's more about, you know, you get 2, 3, 4 million rand watches that looks like if it comes from a lucky packet, so people won't really know it.
Yep.
But the guys that do know, they know, and it just gives the right impression.
Well, it depends on your perspective, doesn't it? I mean, yes, you can. I quite like really understated, good quality watches. I'm a fan of the Cartier Tank, for example. It's highly classic. It's the design. I don't know if it's evolved at all since the Tank was created, for example. And I cannot, for the love or money, imagine ever wearing a Breitling. It's tatty. It's nasty. And you know, the origins of Breitling are very good in aviation and everything else, but really, I cannot be a fan of the ostentatious nature and the sorts of people who wear them, because I just don't like them, and they give the brand a bad sort of association as well.
Yeah, their watches, they did start off, or they are probably known as big chunky watches, but I mean, if you go into the history of it, the brand also has Very classical watches like the Navy Timer series. But if you go the Super Avengers, the Avengers, the Breitling Emergencies, they're all massive watches. But to come back to your point about watches being ostentatious, or you say Breitling, you don't like it, but I mean each person,
Of course.
you go for a certain brand. Like you maybe hate Breitling, but you're a Cartier guy, like you said. Maybe your
No,
wife
no, I'm
is
not a
a
Cartier guy.
Longines.
I wish I was a car. I wish I was a Cartier guy. If I had the opportunity to spend money on a watch that I was going to wear on special occasions, that would be my personal preference. But yes, I'm not a Cartier guy because you've got to own a Cartier.
Yeah,
Or do
because
you?
it
What was it?
expresses your it expresses your personality in some sort of way.
But your fascination, I mean, it goes from a fascination into building a business. And how did you turn that fascination into a business? Because clearly, I mean, there are a million different styles and there are different appetites and also different values, I suppose, and prices you can achieve for watches and access to different models of watches and, finding these things and sourcing them for your customers. How did it all play out?
I went to play a bit of cricket overseas in the UK when I was young and I just left school. I stopped in Dubai. I saw a watch there that I actually purchased for my mom back then. This was probably 18 years ago. I purchased the watch for like 700 rand. Came to South Africa. I saw the exact same watch in the Menlyn shopping mall. It was selling for 3,000 rand. And I always had this entrepreneurial thing where I bought stuff and sold stuff, whether it was my grandmother's vacuum cleaners, trying to go sell that somewhere, or cigarettes from my dad that I went to Pick and Pay and bought a six pack of cigarettes and then sell it to them when they're on holiday. So I always wanted to sell stuff. So, and then I just saw the big margins that there is on watches, and I also loved watches. And then I started researching, and I saw there was not that was also probably the start of the internet in South Africa. It wasn't big online sales, and especially selling high-end valuables online was like non-existent. So then I started the website Luxury Time. I didn't have one watch in stock. So basically what I did, I just went onto overseas websites, copied all their stock that they had, listed it on a website, pretend as if I had the watches in stock, but I never had the watches. And as I got inquiries, then I would go to jewelry stores here in South Africa and tell them, listen, I'm selling watches, but I'm doing it online. That was when like there was a big thing against, they never said you can actually buy authentic watches online. But yeah, that's how you build the credibility over the business. But then, as I said, I went to the stores. Eventually the stores gave me some watches to sell as I got orders through the website. And it snowballed over time where 15 years ago, every single call we would get first was, how do I know you're legit? How do I know it's authentic? All those kind of questions. And fast forward 16, 17 years, we don't get those questions anymore. People are comfortable to sit at their houses, shop online, spend 500,000 or 1 million rand without even seeing a watch, buying it online, and just thought that it's going to arrive at their doorstep the next day. But it does arrive for them. But that's how we have built credibility over the
Amazing.
years in the brand.
Was there an aversion to the retail store selling second-hand watches? Because the last thing you want to do, I suppose, is create competition for your main business, which is the sale of new watches, which the margins are vast in these things. And of course, these are brands that are venerable brands that have been built over centuries in some cases. Did they just not want to be traders in the second-hand market? They were happy for you to have that market?
No, my business actually started as a only selling brand new unworn watches. So I was listing all these watches on the website and getting them brand new, unworn from the stores, and then selling them on. But the margins is pretty slim. I was only getting the kind of discounts, or maybe a little bit more because I was buying a lot. But if they would, example, give a client 20% discount, I would maybe get 30% because I was buying
Okay.
5 or 10 watches at a time. So then, as the all my clients were starting to buy the new watches, maybe they were wearing them for 2 or 3 years, then they would come back to me and say, "Adrian, I want to buy another watch, but what can I do with my old one? Don't you want to buy it back?" And then that's how that business ignited, is by trading back the pre-owned stuff, refurbishing it, and then selling it again to the next clients. And the margins in that is much bigger than, I'd say, selling new watches.
It's interesting, and you're not going to like this story, but I must tell it anyway. Kevin Lings is a well-known economist, and he's got a side hustle, and it's more of a hobby than a hustle. And he takes great pride in sourcing the authentic original components that are used by the big watch brands, the casings, everything. And he goes and builds watches. And at the time I chatted to him about this, which is a long time ago, 6 or 7 years ago, I remember him saying that he could build an Omega watch that was being advertised probably by George Clooney at the time, or one of the James Bonds at the time, probably Daniel Craig. I think he wears Omega in the movies. And that particular watch was going for 70,000 rand. Kevin Lings could source all of the components, authentic components, for about 10,000 rand. And he would go online in this big, deep nerd fest, and then he would sit at home with his little eyepiece thingy, I don't know what that thing's called, and painstakingly build these watches as a horologist would do. The only difference between the watch that he put his own name on it, the Lings watch, while it was, to all intents and purposes, exactly the same sort of thing that was on the shop shelf, it had cost him a fraction of the price to build it than it was on sale for retail. And that's the power of brands, I suppose. If you're going to want to own a Cartier or a Montblanc watch, if you want to do that sort of thing, or you want to have a Breitling, or you want to have any one of the other myriad of watch brands, the branding and the cultivation of those brands over long periods of time, I think, have actually turned this into quite an interesting sector in which to trade and to play, as you found.
Yeah, definitely. So you're saying the guy that one of your friends or that you interviewed, he didn't name the watches Omega. He put his own name on the
No, no,
brand and he
no.
sourced
He
the
put
parts.
his own name. So yeah. So his friends would know that this was exactly the same thing, to all intents and purposes. It just didn't have the Omega brand on it, and he took great joy. And because he's an
Yeah,
economist, he understands these things. He understands supply chains, and he understands margins. But the cost of building these things isn't all that expensive. But the price of having it
No,
on your
that's what I
arm.
wanted. Yeah, that's because you're buying into the brand, into the history, but that's exactly
Exactly.
what you said. Although he built his own brand, and just to show you what he was actually trying to explain to you is the cost of that watch. It's pretty much the same conversation I also often have with clients. The amount of fake watches that is out on the market that is such good replicas compared to authentic one. And if you think you can buy a super replica for around about 20,000 rand, that is pretty much indistinguishable from the real one to the untrained eye. That just tells you like how to, they sell one Rolex watch, let's say the Daytona, which sells on the gray market, the steel one, for plus minus 500 to 600,000 rand. You can buy that exact replica for around about 20,000 rand. So, as you said, I wonder what the actual cost is of making that.
How do you protect yourself?
Sorry, Bruce, I lost you there.
For whatever reason, the digital gods are not on our side this evening. What a pity that is. But yes, you can find out a bit more about him online. You certainly will find the original story from about November last year, all about his new funding. But a fascinating world of watches, watch trading, watch buying. And, I was a bit rude about Breitling. Sorry, Breitling. It's not my taste. And the sort of people that you sell your watches to. not my taste. But that's just me. Each one of these has got a market, otherwise they wouldn't exist. And you certainly, I like to hang around hardware stores. I don't buy very much in hardware stores, but I like to think that if I hang around, maybe by osmosis, I'll develop DIY skills in the same way as I will look at the Wanted magazine and flick through the watch pages and look at the watch adverts, because watch advertising is a thing of great beauty. It is a thing of great beauty. Patek Philippe has still got the best watch payoff line of all time. And it's something along the lines of, you don't own a Patek Philippe. You are its custodian for the next generation, or something like that. And they've created this wonderful mystique around a mechanism that simply tells the time. It doesn't make tea. It doesn't wake you up in the morning. It doesn't give you a massage. It just tells the time. But it also gives you a certain status and a certain elevation in certain societies, or makes people think that you're an ostentatious waste of space. That's the other side of some watch brands anyway. Thank you to Adrian Rutman, who is the founder of Luxury Time on The Money Show.